Welcome to another edition of what I call American Exposé. I'm Chris Gunner speaking to you on the 4th of August, 2005. Where do I begin? Where do I go? Where do I start? I tell you, when you see what's going on, you see all the different directions coming into place, you see the situations being created. You just wonder where to go, what to do, what's the proper thing to do. And I think a lot of us are that way today. We try to wonder what is the right thing to do right now. There's people out there claiming their sovereignty, thumbing their nose at the federal system. There's people very, very concerned about Agenda 21 and its implementation, which is most justified. Because where are we now? Interest rates keep on marching now. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, Darren would call it, Alan Greenspan, said Wednesday that the central bank will keep raising interest rates to ensure that the economy expands at a solid pace with tame inflation. He also warned of speculative fervor in housing markets. As I chronicled yesterday, Joan Vion's talking about a global tax, and that is coming from the Bank for International Settlements out of Basel. No doubt about it, it's been talked about for years. Global governance report from the UN system back in 1994 talked about a global tax, the Tobin tax, I think they called it. Alan Greenspan says our baseline outlook for the U.S. economy is one of sustained, and there's that word sustained economic growth and contained inflation pressures, end quote. Greenspan told the House Financial Services Committee in his mid-year economic outlook. Now we're looking at $286 billion for highways in this country. Why would they be spending so much money for highways and $300+ billion for this Middle East mess? You see how things don't coordinate to common sense? Here we see huge layoffs make for a torrid summer. From the AP, the Press of Associations, the Associated Press, in a week when Alan Greenspan said he expected the U.S. economy to keep growing, and Wall Street seemed generally pleased with the corporate performance. Workers at Eastman Kodak Company, Hewlett-Packard Company, and Kimberly-Clark Corporation, among others, were warned about thousands of new layoffs. Thousands of new layoffs, they say. This is dated July 23rd. This interest rates keep on marching is dated July 20th. Quite remarkable, Quote, you get immune to it after a while, end quote. Longtime Kodak technician John Haldis said with barely a shrug when the scathing, where the scath fell once more at the Rochester-based photography company, slicing away another 10,000 employees. What are these 10,000 employees going to do in just this one situation, listeners? However, some economy watchers suddenly are concerned that this latest flurry of job cuts, a byproduct of various trends such as outsourcing, mergers, automation, changing technology, and consumer demands. Outsourcing would be number one, in my opinion. Quote, we won't know till afterward, but I do think we may be seeing a tipping point in the economic cycle that these big layoffs are flagging, end quote, said John A. Carpenter, chief executive of Challenger, Gray, and Christmas, a Chicago-based employment research firm. U.S. corporations announced plans in June to cut 110,996 jobs. U.S. corporations, listeners, how do they get it all together like that? That's remarkable, people. U.S. corporations announced plans in June to cut 110,996 jobs, the highest monthly total in 17 months, and July's toll could turn out to be steeper. Overall job cuts are on the rise in 2005, reaching 538,274 through June, according to Challenger's monthly job cuts analysis. Suffering its third straight quarterly loss, Kodak increased its job-slashing target by 10,000 on Wednesday, from an earlier range of 12,000 to 15,000. By mid-2007, its worldwide payroll should level out below 50,000, one-third what it was in 1988. Things don't bode well for our country. Back to interest rates keep on marching. What we just covered, huge layoffs make for toward summer, from the Oklahoman in the business section dated Saturday, July 23rd. Interest rates keep on marching, dated July 20th. While giving a generally upbeat outlook, Greenspan cautioned there were, quote, significant insecurities, end quote, well, gee, in his scenario, including a possible rise in oil prices that could dampen growth. Well, that's been predicted by many, and that's obvious on the foreshadowing future to see this happening. A bump in labor costs that could fan inflation, and the uncertain path of surprisingly low long-term interest rates, fueling high home sales. Those poor people. We poor people. In a development Greenspan called, quote, without precedent, end quote, in recent times, long-term rates have declined, even as the Fed has boosted short-term rates. Low mortgage rates, in turn, have pushed home prices to what he called, get this, listeners, quote, end quote, unsustainable. Agenda 21 lingo being used right in front of our eyes that most people don't have a clue about. I'm going to repeat this. In a development Greenspan called without precedent in recent times, long-term rates have declined. Even as the Fed has boosted its short-term rates, low mortgage rates, in turn, have pushed home prices to what he called unsustainable levels in some markets. Prices could fall, causing some economic stress, he warned, though it might not be major. And what did I just cover? 2 days later, huge layoffs make for torrid summer. U.S. corporations announced plans in June to cut 110,996 jobs, the highest monthly total in 17 months. You don't suppose these people have gigantic mortgages, do you, with their families? You don't think these people are distressed, 110,000-plus people, totally distressed? Well, gee, we just passed CAFTA. Well, we just had 10 years of NAFTA, and we've had over 50 years of GATT, formed in 1947. Greenspan said consumers are too willing to experiment with exotic mortgage products such as interest-only or adjustable-rate loans that could leave them vulnerable. Well, I'm sure these 110,000-plus people are very vulnerable. So what do we have here? A planned economy, an engineered global economy, leveling the playing field? Not for us, however. Our playing field has to be lowered. And there's where the situation lies. We are in distraught situations, listeners, very distraught. And we're under a direct design system. It's most ominous. Well, how about communist China, where our products are made that we purchase in most every store in America? On September 11th, 2001, and what is this, communist China, with us or with the terrorists, is the question. On September 11, 2001, 19 terrorists backed by Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda organization, destroyed the World Trade Center and damaged the Pentagon. Nearly 3,000 people died, and that was the good news. Estimates of the dead have been as high as 10,000. Regardless of who's behind this, and I'm very certain it's an inside job in this country. I'm certain of that because we've been replete with inside jobs in this country for the 20th century. The point is, the New York skyline was forever altered, and the Pentagon had a gaping wound that took almost a year to fix. Another planned attack, likely against Washington, D.C., would have taken hundreds more lives, but the passengers of Flight 93 thwarted the terrorist plans, supposedly. 9 days later, as he prepared a nation for war, President George Walker Bush sent a message that resonated around the world to allies and enemies alike. You are either with us or with the terrorists. That's what George Walker Bush stated. I remember it. You do as well. In the months since, many nations and regimes have taken sides, and some have tried to take both sides. One regime, however, has succeeded in the unusual trifecta of playing the two sides against each other while extracting diplomatic and other benefits from both. That regime is the Chinese Communist Party, currently ruling what it calls the People's Republic of China. It has attempted successfully to pass itself off as a friend and ally in the war on terror. Its actions have revealed a very different preference. For communist China, the terrorist war is simply another stage in their undeclared Cold War with the United States, just as World War II was another stage in the first Cold War for the Soviets. The war on terror is a stage of Cold War II for the People's Republic. At times, they have been less frequent than is widely believed. It has sided with us in the war on terror. Far more often, it has sided with the terrorists. The focus on Afghanistan and the Middle East has allowed communist China's activities prior to September 11th and in a number of cases since then go unnoticed. The West, in particular, the United States, would ignore these actions at their peril. In January 2002, President Bush took the terrorist war beyond al-Qaeda to the axis of evil, indicating by name three regimes for their separate or support of terrorists and development of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons. Those rogue regimes were Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. Many others have noted terrorist support from Libya, Syria, even American ally Pakistan. In fact, these nations Pakistan, Afghanistan prior to the end of the Taliban control, Iraq, Iran, North Korea, Syria, and Libya, and Al-Qaeda all have two things in common. First, they have either taken part in terrorist attacks or supported others that did commit attacks on the United States of America. Second, each and every one listed, including Al-Qaeda, has won support from or struck deals with the People's Republic of China. The support varies among the members of the list, but the record is there and it is undisputed. Keep in mind, Russia and China are about to do a joint military exercise. This dangerous view on communist China has led to a number of problems. The military is shifting to a smaller fighting force, equipped to handle small, quick actions only, rather than diversifying to enable it to act both where fast, small forces are needed and where large forces are required to deter a major hostile power. Keep in mind, listeners, our military morale is down very low. We're being subjected to depleted uranium weapons. Our soldiers are getting sick. It's been reported by many that this is the case. The rose-colored glasses on communist China have also skewed policy towards Stalinist North Korea and the possibility of the People's Republic replacing its ties to Iraq and Iran if it falls, and other nations that are rich in oil and have helped terrorists in the past, such as Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Yemen. And so keep these thoughts in place when you try to understand how these situations go on. Our messes are a created mess, and I cover here information from Dragon in the Dark, how and why communist China helps our enemies on the war on terror. It's a very revealing in many regards. But what I want to do is cover some other directions here today. Go back to the past. Red Cocaine, the Drugging of America by Joseph Douglas Jr., listeners. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Throughout the 1950s, Henry Alslinger, this is Chapter 9, the U.S. Commissioner of Narcotics, worked hard to make people recognize that Communist China was the primary force responsible for narcotics trafficking. The Mafia, he explained in response to misleading press reports, quote, was not the biggest drug dealer. This was a false impression. By far the biggest drug dealer was Peking, end quote. Peking is now Beijing, listeners. Anslinger, provided extensive data to the United Nations and to the U.S. Congress. He identified the Chinese government agencies that were involved, as well as numerous trafficking routes out of China through North Korea and Southeast Asia into Japan, the Philippines, Hawaii, Alaska, Mexico, and the United States. He led efforts to attack known distribution nets. But while he was unable to stop the flow, at least he did identify the source of the problem, Communist China. Here we see China and Russia join exercises to strengthen ties. Dated August 2nd, nearly 10,000 troops. And 10,000 troops is a drop in the bucket, do you suppose? Well, what do they say? 10,000 troops are to take part in an unprecedented joint military exercises by China and Russia this month aimed at strengthening ties between the armed forces of the two powers that were once bitter foes. Joseph Douglas believes they were bitter foes. I don't. I don't believe they were bitter foes at all. I think they've been allies playing games about being bitter foes because of the situation. Because, listen, the Soviet Union put Communist China in place. The Soviet Union supplied Communist China with their weapons indirectly through aid and trade arrangements in this country. Indirectly. according to some sources, all of the weaponry for Vietnam, to North Vietnam, came from the Japanese of the Second World War. How did that happen? Chinese state media said yesterday the Peace Mission 2005 exercises would be held from August 18th through the 25th in and around the Russian far eastern port of Vladivostok and the Chinese coastal province of Shandong. Anyway, we go back to hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Then in the early 1960s, something happened. Stephen T. Posney, in a study of Chinese narcotics trafficking, observed, quote, beginning in the early 1960s, the subject, Communist China's drug offensive against the United States, which originally had attracted great attention, became an unsubject, to paraphrase Orwell. In a detailed analysis of the problem, A. H. Stanton Candlin observed the same phenomena. Quote, the matter was handled differently until about 1962, before which year the United States showed signs of official comprehension of the problem. Since then, the threat has apparently been concealed from the public by persons who have evidently had the desire to cultivate better relations with the Chinese communists. The Chinese are the principal miscreants in the criminal conspiracy, and they have been able of late to obtain protection and support in unexpected quarters, end quote. It is, perhaps, not a mere coincidence that 1962 is the year in which Harry Anslinger retired, and that in 1961 the pro-China interest moved into the State Department. This coincidence is interesting, especially when coupled with the Soviet intelligence on the 1957 meeting of China's Central Committee, when they decided to encourage overseas investment in China. In 1969, President Nixon declared war on drugs. One of the first actions taken was to identify the sources of the problem. In one effort, analysts at the Central Intelligence Agency began looking at the drug trafficking that was emanating from Southeast Asia. Drawing on a massive amount of detail from a wide array of sources, the first map was drawn of the Golden Triangle that was regarded as the main source of drugs and narcotics. The triangle included parts of Thailand, Burma, Laos, and especially Yunnan Province, China. The northeast tip of the triangle was located well up in Yunnan Province near Kunming. Yes, Yunnan Province was indeed the dominant source, both in its own right and through its control of and assistance to operations in northern Burma and Thailand. As described by the CIA first Far East specialist who constructed the map, the triangle was really a golden V whose apex was in the region where Thailand, Burma, and Laos came together. Most of the area, the funnel of the V, was in Yunnan Province. This assessment is identical to the information provided by John Cena, based in Czechoslovak, and Soviet intelligence studies. He also reported that in 1960, China signed a, quote, treaty of friendship and cooperation, end quote, with Burma, which provided China the opportunity to operate openly in Burma. According to KGB estimates, 50% of Chinese representatives in Burma were involved officially in the drug business in the early 1960s. In 1970, the CIA map of the Golden Triangle was passed to the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, the forerunner of the DEA. Months later, a new version of the map emerged from the White House. The tip of the triangle had been moved from 25 degrees north latitude in China, about 20 degrees north latitude in Laos. The new designation is on the map that's here in the book. With a few strokes of a pen, Communist China had been effectively included with or from the Golden Triangle. At that time, the top national level organization concerned with illegal narcotics trafficking was Ad Hoc Committee on Narcotics, chaired by Henry Kissinger. As observed by Edward J. Epstein, Kissinger evidenced little interest in the heroin problem and rarely attended committee meetings. General Alexander Haig usually chaired the meetings in Kissinger's absence. Quote, Kissinger, Under Secretary of State Elliot Richardson, and Haig spent most of their efforts dampening the enthusiasm of White House zealots to launch a new heroin crusade, which might again threaten diplomatic relations with important allies, end quote. Certainly the initiative towards China was one of the high-priority diplomatic actions at that time. Epstein also noted that after the Department of Defense began using reconnaissance planes to help identify poppy fields in Burma and Laos, Kissinger stopped the overflights of Burma specifically to avoid threatening detente with China. In September of 1971, the Cabinet Committee on International Narcotics Control was formed, headed by Secretary of State William P. Rogers. The committee seldom met and was quietly phased out in 1972. While in existence, it was run by Nelson Gross, a Republican from Saddle River, New Jersey, who had been defeated in his quest for a Senate seat in 1970 and who President Nixon had then appointed as senior advisor and coordinator for the International Narcotics Matters at the State Department. In August 1972, shortly before the committee's demise, Secretary Rogers released a study that had been performed under its auspices, World Opium Survey, 1972. The major producers of illicit opium identified in this report are India, Afghanistan, Turkey, Pakistan, Burma, Thailand, Laos, Mexico, Eastern Europe, North Africa, and Latin America. The geographies of the Southeast Asian network, as presented in the study, are reproduced here in Figure 3, which you obviously cannot see. As can be seen, both China and North Vietnam are effectively included in this representation of the opium network. Moreover, the text, which specifically addresses the People's Republic of China, is quite revealing. The text explains that in February 1950, China introduced stringent controls over the production of opium poppy and the use of opiates, and that the measures were strictly enforced, and that the problem of opium use had been effectively eliminated. Some small-scale illicit production may remain, the text allowed, and, along with it, quote, perhaps minor amounts of cross-border trade in the commodity, end quote. However, quote, there is no reliable evidence that China has either engaged in or sanctioned the illicit export of opium and its derivatives, nor are there any indications of government participation in the opium trade of Southeast Asia and adjacent markets, end quote. I'm going to pick this up where I left off. This is very, very revealing of the past, bringing us to the present with our situations that we're living today, listeners. China and Russia joint military exercises. What are they going to do for us? They could have 10,000 over there. They could have 50,000 over here. 100,000 over here right now in the Northern Hemisphere. Right now.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil, because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the internet and following the instructions there to support us. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Certainly, these thoughts in my mind are quite ominous to me. While we're watching 10,000 participate in a joint exercise from the 18th to the 25th of August, how much of a Chinese military is here in America? How much of a Chinese and a Soviet military is here on the North American continent in plain clothes that have migrated to this country under human rights treaties that are allowed? State Department does it too, brings people in from all over the world. What is the possibility of a major event here? Why is this country immune from a major invasion and an event? It's an economic scenario that's in place. And I've always said, why would they want to mess with this country when it's getting done without firing a shot? And there's the whole point. U.S. willingness to capitulate in preference to atomic war. U.S. willingness to capitulate in preference to engaging in atomic war. Number two of the current communist goals of 1963. This is where our country is today. We'll give up in a heartbeat. We don't have the stomach to fight a war because we've been fighting wars through the years. We're in a war right now in the Middle East mess. You don't know who your enemy is in the Middle East. Civilians suffer the most. That proved itself in Vietnam and Korea. Yet we're there again to save Iraq from itself and Saddam Hussein. Why is Saddam Hussein not on trial? Why is not there ever a public trial of any of these quote-unquote dictators? And once again, Saddam Hussein was called a president by our press at one time. Everyone's called a president for our consumption, our dumbing down process. So we were warned before. According to Mario Estevez Gonzalez, a Cuban intelligence agent in 1981, quote, I was ordered to load up the United States with drugs, end quote. According to Antonio Ferra, high-level Nicaraguan official in 1984, quote, drugs were used as political weapons. The target was the youth of the United States, end quote. According to Major Juan Rodriguez, Cuban intelligence officer, in 1988, quote, drugs are considered to be the best way to destroy the United States by undermining the will of American youth. The enemy is destroyed without firing one bullet, end quote. According to Mao Zedong in 1935, quote, opium should be regarded as a powerful weapon. That's right, opium should be regarded as a powerful weapon. It has been employed by imperialists against us, and now we should use it against them, end quote. Nikita Khrushchev in 1963 stated, quote, deception and drugs are our first two strategic echelons in the war with capitalism, end quote. According to Roger Moore, author of The French Connection, quote, red cocaine is at last blows the lid off the most explosive aspect of drug trafficking, the Soviet connection. Here is the shocking story of the drugging of America by international communism, end quote. Chapman Pincher, author of Secret Offensive, quote, this eye-opening book proves the insidious involvement of the Soviet intelligence services in the deliberate spread of the drug menace in the United States, end quote. From the introduction by Dr. Ray Klein, former Deputy Director for Intelligence, Central Intelligence Agency, quote, a powerful and well-documented case of a deliberate policy decision, first by authorities in Beijing, then in Moscow, to contribute to the decay of American society. Red cocaine puts the facts on record. We ignore the message it reveals at our own peril, end quote. Red cocaine should be a required reading in every school in America. Homeschool in America, anyway. 45 Communist Goals of 1963. We cover it all the time. It's in other links of American Exposé. It's at the Information Corner as well. Probably in a lot of websites. Number two, U.S. willingness to capitulate in preference to engaging in atomic war. Number three, develop the illusion that total disarmament by the United States would be a demonstration of moral strength. Number four, permit free trade between all nations, regardless of communist affiliation, and regardless of whether or not items could be used for war. And number one, U.S. acceptance of coexistence as the only alternative to atomic war. I pick up where I left off in the book entitled Red Cocaine, The Drugging of America by Joseph D. Douglas, Jr., the title of Chapter 9, Hear No Evil, See No Evil, Speak No Evil. I pick up where I left off. Let's go back a paragraph. Moreover, the text, which specifically addresses the People's Republic of China, is quite revealing. The text explains in February 1950, China introduced stringent controls over the production of opium poppy and the use of opiates, that the measures were strictly enforced, and that the problem of opium use had been effectively eliminated. Some small-scale illicit production may remain, the text allowed, and, along with it, quote, perhaps minor amounts of cross-border trade in the commodity, end quote. However, there is no reliable evidence that China has either engaged in or sanctioned the illicit export of opium and its derivatives, nor are there any indications of government participation in the opium trade of Southeast Asia and adjacent markets. Similar statements were also made during the time frame 1971 to 1973 by the Strategic Intelligence Office of the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, BNDD. For example, quote, not one investigation into heroin traffic in the area during the past 2 years indicates Chinese communist involvement. In each case, the traffickers were people engaged in criminal activity for usual profit motive, end quote. While statements such as these can be explained as the result of naivety or incompetence, it seems quite clear that there is also present a continuing effort to cover up Chinese communist drug trafficking. One of the favorite words used to avoid the existence of intelligence information is evidence. What really constitutes evidence? Does a report in draft form constitute an investigation? A former CIA analyst who was detailed in a strategic intelligence office of BNDD, which became the DEA in July 1973, was writing a report on Communist China's intelligence service and specifically its involvement in narcotics trafficking. At the time the above denial was written, the report picked up the Chinese narcotics trail back in the days of Anslinger, and brought the story forward to the present time. The report identified names, dates, places, organizations, and so forth. There was no question about the heavy and deliberate involvement of Communist China. The report was suppressed in 1973, while still a draft stage, by DEA officials. The cover-up of Communist China's narcotics trafficking appears to have been started in the early 1960s. It took on greatly increased force during the Nixon administration and appears to remain the situation today. Today would be 1990, listeners, when this book was written. Never in reports out of state, customs, DEA, is China included in the Golden Triangle. About the only mention of Communist China in congressional hearings on drug trafficking over the past decade was in the testimony of Dr. Ray Klein, former Deputy Director for Intelligence, CIA. In discussing the combination of revolutionaries, mostly Marxist-Leninist, drug traffickers and gun runners, Klein explained, quote, "I became familiar with it, the combination in Southeast Asia, because back in the 1950s and 1960s, we observed the most drugs, most opium, was coming from the Triangle, which is the southern part of Communist China, Burma, where the Communist Party of Burma controls most of the drug-growing area, and some parts of Laos and Thailand," end quote. Klein's testimony parallels testimony in 1972 by General Louis Walt, who also recognized the strong role of China. Quote, "I've used the expression the Golden Triangle because it has been used for many years, but I cannot help wondering, Mr. Chairman, whether it would not be more accurate to speak of the Golden Quadrangle, or Quadrangle, to view of the fact that the contiguous province of Yunnan in China is the site of a very substantial opium agriculture. Yunnan might conceivably be responsible for a production in excess of the combined production of Burma, Thailand, and Laos," end quote. So, while China has been and likely remains the most important producer and organizer in the Golden Triangle, China is rarely listed as a producing country in any of the reports issued by the State Department, the Drug Enforcement Administration, or U.S. Customs. Moreover, China is not the only country that is generally omitted from reports on drug and narcotics producing countries. Most communist countries are conveniently excluded. Another curiosity with respect to China involves the Presidential Commission directed to examine the trafficking in Vietnam that had emerged in the summer of 1970 and caused narcotics addiction to grow like the plague among the U.S. military. As indicated earlier, the primary source the commission identified was China, but the commission's report was classified and suppressed. As one member of the commission, General Louis Walt, later confided to a close friend, keeping silent about the role of China was the most damnable order he had ever received. Keep in mind also, General Walt was the head of the Marine Corps, I believe, in Vietnam. Bobby Garwood was one of the drivers for General Walt. Bobby Garwood took the Jeep that he drove General Walt around, went to a place called China Beach to pick up a soldier, a high-ranking soldier, to go to the airport to be shipped home. Bobby Garwood was 10 days away from being furloughed back to America to be married. Bobby Garwood was taken as a prisoner in 1965 in General Walt's Jeep, listeners. And he found a way to get out 14 years later to be vilified by this government, by the DEA, the DIA. He was court-martialed 4 years later, in 1984. He went back to Vietnam in 1992 to prove to the DIA all the places that prisoners of war were held after Operation Homecoming. And the Viet Cong admitted to them in 1992 that, yes, there's more POWs, and they were here. Keep that in mind always. Do not forget the prisoners of war in Korea, Vietnam, Second World War, First World War. Those that never came back but were still alive when the war was over. Never forget that. I continue. Nor does this appear to have been the only such directive. In May 26, 1972, Jack Anderson reported on a White House document that had been making the rounds of the State, Defense, and Treasury Departments and the U.S. Information Agency. The confidential document refers to stories about Red China's role in the world drug trade as errant nonsense and ordered government officials to cease making derogatory statements about the People's Republic of China. There was, the document stated, no evidence that Peking was bringing opium and heroin into Vietnam. During the 1970s, the drug and narcotics problem continued to grow, notwithstanding the priority President Nixon placed on combating the problem. In retrospect, while the President may have been secure in his statements about the need to wage war on illegal drug and narcotics trafficking, Epstein, in his analysis of the U.S. anti-narcotics trafficking efforts during the Nixon administration, is highly suspicious of the motivations of the bureaucracy and the senior-level officials. Following extensive research, he concluded that the drug problem was used to build empires, garner political headlines in the news media, and provide the rationale for the development of a national White House-directed police force to be used for political tasks. No real interest in either understanding or combating the drug and narcotics problem during the Nixon administration's war on drugs was discovered by Epstein. Moreover, he adds, high-level officials involved with the war on drugs had a prior history of using the drug problem for personal political gain. The difficulties that the U.S. government has dealing with countries whose governments are involved with drug trafficking seem to be almost independent of who is in office. Consider, for example, the strange case of Bulgaria. The Bulgarian intelligence defector, KDS, Colonel Stefan Sevdlov, had been directly involved in drug trafficking and, when he defected in 1970, brought with him official Bulgarian state security documentation dealing with their narcotics trafficking. Other U.S. intelligence sources also identified the role of Bulgaria in drug trafficking and explained how the company, Kentex, was formed as a front for Bulgarian state security to assist in the narcotics trafficking and flow of illicit arms and ammunition throughout Europe and the Middle East. Numerous sources also identified the Bulgarian plan to import large amounts of opium for conversion into heroin for drug trafficking. There was also a CIA study identifying Bulgaria as a new center for directing narcotics and arms trafficking between Europe and the Near East. Nevertheless, in June 1971, U.S. Customs and the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs officials went to Sofia and proposed that the United States train Bulgarian customs officials who are part of state security, on how to combat the drug trafficking that was taking place across Bulgarian borders. Even though Bulgarians must have been surprised, which may account for their hosting a conference of customs directors from the Soviet bloc nations in October 1971. A U.S.-Bulgarian agreement was reached in November 1971, and in 1973, U.S. Customs began holding training seminars in Varna, Bulgaria. They taught the Bulgarians U.S. Customs techniques and identified to the Bulgarian officials these individuals living in Bulgaria, who the U.S. officials believed were involved in drug trafficking. Not until 1981 did U.S. officials decide they were not getting full cooperation from the government of Bulgaria in combating the drug trafficking problem and temporarily stopped the training seminars and one-day exchange of intelligence information. From 1970 until 1984, the date of the DEA report on Congress on Bulgaria's lack of cooperation, DEA identifies numerous source reports on the official involvement of Bulgaria. The reports identify Kintex and other companies, Texim and Corcom, as state security front operations that manage drug production and trafficking. Officials of the Communist Party of Bulgaria are involved in organizing coordination meetings in Sofia for traffickers. Bulgarian Customs, which is part of state security, is also part of the operation. Nor does this recital include additional CIA data on the Bulgarian operation. Yet, notwithstanding this continuous and consistent flow of information over 14 years, the best the DEA could conclude in 1984 was that the government of Bulgaria, quote, appears to have established a policy of encouraging and facilitating the trafficking of narcotics under the corporate veil of Kintex, end quote. Moreover, notwithstanding direct source statements and Bulgarian state security documentation that official destabilization in the objective of the narcotics trafficking, all DEA could do is admit that the use of drugs is a political weapon, quote, may be inferred, end quote. And then state with assurance that more immediate motives are to obtain hard currency and support dissident groups in the Middle East. The U.S. government, to this day, continues efforts to try to convince the Bulgarians to cooperate with the United States in curtailing the drug trafficking, and as recently as 1986, stated the brief that there were increasing prospects for Bulgarian cooperation in an apparent effort to have it their way. The State Department, in their March 1989 International Narcotics Control Strategy report to Congress, denied the traffickers operated openly any longer in Bulgaria and stated that there was, quote, no indication that either illicit production of opiates is occurring in Bulgaria, nor is there evidence that illicit drugs are refined, end quote. And that money laundering was not a factor. But during the last week in March 1989, the true story became evident when DEA agent reports embassy wires and DEA/CIA correspondence that showed that the State Department report was a combination of misrepresentations and lies were leaked to selected news reporters, who then wrote detailed articles for the New York Tribune, Newsday, and the Washington Times. The reports provided official details on a joint DEA Swiss action against Turkish money launderers operating out of Sofia, Bulgaria. This is quite an interesting book, listeners. Red Cocaine. And I'm sure it's available somewhere. Amazon.com. Everyone should read it. It opens some eyes to a lot of people. And Joseph Douglas, Dr. Douglas, is a national security affairs consultant with 25 years' experience in defense policy, technology, and intelligence. And he worked in the U.S. government where he was Deputy Director, Technical Technology Office, Advanced Research Project Agency, ARPA, and with several Washington area defense contractors. And he has served on various Defense Science Board studies and is currently a consultant or advisor to various government agencies and nonprofit institutes. And this is dated 1990, listeners. Red Cocaine also confirms the unpleasant reality that U.S. officials have bent over backwards to avoid recognizing any such involvement by the communists. And as this book documents, listeners, evidence of communist involvement in drug trafficking has been manipulated, deliberately suppressed, or simply ignored. And while it is true that the United States has been waging a war on drugs for several years, and now it's been a few decades, the battle plans, such as they are, do not recognize the nature of the enemy or enemy strategy. And there is the crux of the problem. The beat goes on. China and Russia join exercise. It all connects to dots. It all connects to dots and infiltration in this government today. What is the ultimate direction and design? What is the plan in the future? Who knows? On the website, Central Asia, U.S. strikes out. Very, very important to read this, listeners. On the website, AmericanExpose.com. American spelled with a K. This is by Ramantu Mitra. If Alfred Nobel had set up a prize to reward the heads of states for acting most arbitrarily, President Islam Karimov would have been a frontline contender. On July 30th, Uzbekistan's foreign ministry similarly notified the U.S. Embassy in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, that U.S. forces would be evicted from the Kurish-Kamabad K-2 Air Base, the only U.S. military facility in the country. The eviction notice gives the U.S. 180 days to move aircraft, personnel, and military equipment from the base in southern Uzbekistan. Amazing. Quite a revealing article. We're just about out of time. I've connected some dots, not nearly all the dots need to be connected, listeners, but I want you to be aware of the deceptions that we live today, all deceptions, and this is the seriousness of the problem. Products made in communist China, on our store shelves, communism in place, Russia and China joint military exercises, secret containers coming to America uninspected. For how long? How long have they been uninspected? For years, uninspected. And there lies the problem, listeners. So much going on. So little time to work together to stop the infiltration of Agenda 21 in America and the rest of the world. Part of the UN system directed by the State Department. U.S. mission to the United Nations. Good evening. God bless you all. Stay tuned tomorrow night at this time slot for Darren Weeks. He does it best.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit Discount Gold and Silver.